Hello, Darlene.
Hello, Mr. Cox.
You ready to sing one?
I'm always ready.
Well, all right. In my dreams, you're blowing me some kisses.
That's one of my favorite things to do.
You and I could go down in history.
That's what I'm praying to do with you.
Let's do it. Feel good. Let's do it and make that sacred sound. Put two and two together, perfect harmony we found. We know it's only natural. Let's do.
I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
It was a defensive exercise.
Yeah, best defense is a good offense. Or is it the other way around?
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever amazing, ever spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to Secret Defenders, where I task my guests to defend their favorite movies that are underrated, infamous, or obscure. And we are welcoming, it's been a long while since we've had this guest on, a very long time. There's been babies, there's been marriages, there's been shows, there's been him playing Mr. Burns at one point. It's been a wacky journey he's been on. He's been a busy boy. And not once has he ever paid for drugs. Not once. And he's here again. It's been literal years. I think the last one we did was Ginger Snaps, I think. It's Nathan Smith. Welcome back, sir.
Happy to be back.
Oh, it's been a long while, and I think we've talked about this podcast for some time. Actually, we talked about this film for some time. We're going to look at one of the best comedy films of the 21st century, one of the best spoofs of the musical biopic. It is Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. We have danced around it, and we've talked about it, and we both of us quite enjoy this film. But why is it that you wanted to talk about it, bring it to people's attention? Why should more people watch Dewey Cox?
I feel John C. Reilly's other work seems to get more attention than Walk Hard. As far as I'm aware, according to my research, Step Brothers was the next year, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah. 2000.
Which just exploded.
Nine, I want to say. Yeah. So,
and yeah. Talladega Nights, which is, you know, decent comedy film,
solid.
Is a year before. And John C. Reilly, because I've been doing my research, has 20 years of just working like with Scorsese, Paul Thomas Anderson, and then all of a sudden he becomes like Will Ferrell's best friend and goes into these wacky comedies. And I feel as though it's a little bit of a Jackie Brown for him is Walk Hard, because it's sandwiched between these two great Will Ferrell comedies. Mm. And by this period of time, the whole epic movie, Meet the Spartans, disaster movies are just killing the spoof. Mm. Judd Apatow's doing different comedies at the time. And the style of comedy, which is funny, has changed by the late noughties.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I think he's a bit of an underrated performer because he can do the serious. He can do, you know, those hard-hitting kind of dramas, your Boogie Nights, your Magnolias, your whatever else he's been in, those type of things. And again, like you said, he's got all that experience, that wealth of experience. And again, he's a cracking singer, he's a cracking performer. And again, he's really, really funny. And I feel like unfortunately, I think after like the Holmes and Watson situation, like that went down like a lead balloon. And I think he's kind of gone back into the kind of more serious roles again. I think he did, was it the Sisters Brothers? It was like a Western. I think he did stuff like that.
I've been watching the Winning Time, the Lakers dynasty, which is directed by Adam McKay, where he plays the head of the LA Lakers in the 70s. And he's brilliant in it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of controversy over that anyway, because Will Farrell wanted the role and it was originally Michael Shannon. And Michael Shannon didn't like the talking to the camera stuff, so he dropped out, and Will Farrell had always wanted to play this role. But Adam McKay gave it to John C. Reilly. So Adam McKay and Will Farrell have had a huge argument, and I think they've actually ended their company together now.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think they had a shared company. But yeah, bloody hell, that's quite a awkward. But enough about that. I'm sure we'll talk about some other problematic stuff, as I'm sure there's some in this film, no doubt. But this film specifically, you're a big kind of music aficionado, self-titled music snob, you know, and again, you're a lover of spoof, you're a lover of kind of music history. I know we used to watch the Behind the Music documentaries. Those are always quite funny and kind of heartbreaking and interesting and fascinating. What is it about this specific project of John C. Reilly that really kind of tickles all those fancies for you?
I think any film which has original songs which hasn't come from a stage production deserves at least 3 stars minimum anyway. And the parody songs and the homages to the artists that they do in the film, from Johnny Cash to Ray to Bob Dylan to the Brian Wilson Beach Boys stuff. The brilliant songs, even if they're not a parody, they're well written, they're funny, some great harmonies, the duet.
Let's duet. That's definitely my favorite.
Brilliant. They're so well written. And what it does compared to the other spoofs of its time is, because it's well written, it basically critiques all the rays, the warp the lines, the Doors. It turns everything on its head. And I think it really did throw a spanner in the works for any music biopic that came out for the next 10 years or so.
I was reading an article on the Rolling Stone about Walk Hard, and they were talking about that we didn't really get music. It kind of, like, we're talking about the killing of the spoof, we're talking about the killing of the music biopic. And I think you are to a degree right, because we didn't really get it until maybe Bohemian Rhapsody again and Rocket Man. And I was reading the article. I've not seen Bohemian Rhapsody, actually. I've seen Rocket Man, but I've not seen Bohemian Rhapsody. But
you're not missing anything.
Oh, good. This is what I heard. This is exactly what I heard. Like, I heard the editing was bad and loads of other stuff. I've heard Rami Malek is good, but apart from that, not so much missed. But yeah, like, and they were saying that, you know, Bryan Singer didn't see Walk Hard, so stepped into the traps that Walk Hard made fun of. So now we're looking at Walk Hard as kind of a milestone in a way, because it has all of its cake and it gets to eat it too. It's, you know, like you said, the music is fantastic, the songs are incredible, well played, well rehearsed, you know, sung, performed, composed, you know, all of that is so, so good. But then we still have the ridiculousness of the basically every other moment in that. John C. Reilly was given the role early on, and were like, there is only one person who can do this role, and it's John C. Reilly. They knew. And then he took it so seriously. He would, you know, research, he would spend time, he would build these songs, he would work on the songs, he'd perform the songs. Either he sung all the songs and did most of them on guitar. You know, he lived this life. He even went on tour as Dewey Cox, because it was during, unfortunately, one of the reasons it didn't do so well was it was during the writer's strike, which happened back then as well. So a way to kind of subtly promote it was them going on tour. And Kristen Wiig did the Let's Duet song with him. And you know, they went on the road. It's kind of a bit Spinal Tap a little bit as well. They kind of literally did what they were making fun of. They were like, we wouldn't ever do this.
but we're doing it, and this is exactly what we thought it would be. So there is a kind of, and I think when you get to the end of the film as well, like spoilers, but there's a song at the end. You get to the beautiful ride section, and you're kind of a little bit caught up in it.
You are. It's a really well-written song, is Beautiful Ride.
It's gorgeous. Like, it's one of those, it's your, you know, that's your Frank Sinatra, you know, I did it my way. That kind of, like, I've lived my life, you know, it's been full, it's been fantastic through ups and downs, but it has been, you know, a unique experience. And John C. Reilly, in an article I'll link in the podcast notes, in the show notes, that some big name actors came up to him at the end of the film and were like, I watch this, you know, time and time again, listen to that song, and it makes me cry. And he wouldn't name the actors. We'll say Robert De Niro, for example. But yeah, big name A-list actors are like, that's just a fucking great song.
And I think people forget with Hollywood movies that when Pixar took over Disney of the main sort of films, songs disappeared from movies. And it wasn't until Tangled and Frozen when songs came back. And when Walk Hard came out, basically, it wasn't in that period when parody songs were cool anymore. And I know we've recently had things like Popstar and the Weird Al Yankovic movie, which have got those songs in there. But this was way before all Lonely Island and everything like that.
Sure. But again, like, Popstar had the same problem. Like, for some reason, these films don't seem to, like for me, the Let Me Hold You, Little Man, the song about him, his misplaced kind of, like, I want to look after the midget, protect the midget, and again, it's not a word we use anymore, but in the context of the film, he's, you know, he thinks he's like, oh, I'm going to fight for this cause. I'm going to fight for the little man. You know, he's an idiot. You know, he's complete, you know, numpty. And that's his version of pop stars, you know, not gay or equal rights or whatever it's called in that song. It's the exact same idea. It's you got this pretentious pop star, rock star trying to make a difference, make a change, but actually just entirely making it about themselves as they are trying to push forward this cause, this like nice cause. There's another song called Mr. President, which they cut from the film, or I'm not sure if it's in the extended version. I don't know. Have you seen the extended version?
I have. I think this is where we kind of differ, because I've got the extended version of it. So I'm not quite sure anymore what's in the original.
Right. Okay. I know the third wife is Cheryl Teagues. And yeah. Patrick Duffy. I think it's mostly the 70s stuff that they cut, I think, for the most
part. I didn't remember any of that. Does the original have the version of Starman?
Yes. Yeah, very briefly. Very briefly, it has Starman, I think. I'm not sure if there's a performance, but there's definitely like at least like a very limited clip of it, but not maybe not a full performance. But it has the interview with what's her face, Jane Lynch.
Yes,
it has that, and it has a few other things. I will watch the longer. I think they call it the unbearably long director's cut or something, which is something Apatow is quite guilty of in his later comedies. Yeah. That they just seem to be getting longer and less funny as time goes on.
He doesn't write a very good third act, does he, Judd Apatow? They always dip in. I think this one's an exception to the rule, but Apatow does write a poor third act.
Yeah. I don't think he writes this, though. I think he purely produced it, I think. I know when it didn't do so well at the box office, because it was like a budget of $35 million, and I think it made $20 million. His daughter remembers that day because he was absolutely gutted, because he put so much effort and was so happy with it. He loved the idea, the concept, the music, the performance, the jokes, you name it. And he was... And his daughter now refers to it. She goes, are you a bit sad? Are you going to be as sad as when Walk Hard came out? And he's like, I think I took it really well. But no, it was absolutely devastating. And I think all of them were, because they put so much effort and time and money into it. And again, like, that's another thing about it. The production design, the costumes, the set. Like, it's as if you are making Walk the Line, or you are making Ray. Like, they put all of the effort in, because they took that so seriously. I think that just equally balances out the comedy, like the ludicrousness, because that's your, I don't know, that's your anchor of the believability of that. Mm-hmm. And it keeps you ingrained and interested in the characters and what they're doing, how their life is going. And that allows you to go so ludicrous with the comedy. What are some of your favorite either characters, moments, or situations within the film? I've got loads, like almost all of it. But
I think Tim Meadows is at a career height during this. He is brilliant. And weirdly, does he play the manager in Popstar as well?
He does, yes, he does. And David, I think it's David Krumholtz. Yes. Is that his name? He's in Ray.
Oh.
He plays the manager in Ray, so then he comes back in this. And he's like, I think it was his idea to have the unibrow.
Yeah.
Well. But yeah, that's the one, that's when he's like, yeah. So he plays a very similar character. He's not in it much in Walk Hard, but yeah, he plays that kind of role. Mm. But like even some of the scenes, like are literally like cherry picked from those films. Like
they're so spot on, aren't they?
Oh,
and
so
I love it because it is a pet hate for me in any of these biopics. It's when somebody's kind of playing a riff or they're having an argument, mm. and you know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
there's that almost cringe bit in Ray, isn't there, when he pretty much breaks up with his girlfriend and then says, "Well, sing this song," and then it's Hit the Road, Jack, and she's really going for it. Mm. And it's those things, and I love that bit in Walk Hard, where he starts going into the title and the lyrics of the song while he's speaking with Kristen Wiig. It's just brilliant. And just all of the moments where they're really hitting, well, it's the year 1966. That's right. We're the Beatles. Look at me. I'm Paul McCartney. They're all saying their names. And it's exactly what they do
in
the biopics as well. They really have to go, this is this character, and it's this time. Mm. Yeah. And this song is about to come on.
Yes, I'm going to do a really good performance. If my name isn't Buddy Holly, you know, all that. Be quiet, Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, all that sort of shit. Yeah, I love those moments. All those moments where it's like Kristen Wiig plays it to a T, and this is like before she's just kind of started SNL at this point, so she's just growing her kind of fan base and getting up to where she is now. And she's fantastic as she goes, I'm Dewey Cox, 12-year-old girlfriend, look at me.
That's brilliant, that bit. You hear that? I'm his girlfriend. Oh, it's wonderful. She's brilliant. She steals a lot of the scenes that she's in.
I love Ron Howard's dad turns up as well. He's the preacher at the start, where he's like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that's Ron Howard's dad and Clint Howard's dad. And he's like, it's devil music. And like, it's just a song about holding hands. And they're like, you know what the devil has? He has hands. And you know what he does with them? He uses them for holding.
I mean, in terms of cameos and cast, it's just brilliant. And I only watched it about 6 months ago, and rewatching it last night, even I'd forgotten who was in it.
Mm.
So you go, oh my goodness, Jonah Hill's in it. I forgot Jonah Hill turns out to be the brother.
He's the ghost. The dead brother. I'd be like an astronaut now. I love that he's like guilt tripping him. It's like, you know, what's really interesting as well is that some of this stuff that's quite funny is actually based on like fact. Like you know the him losing his sense of smell is like Ray, isn't it?
It's
like, oh yeah, no, I've lost my sense of smell. Oh no, it can't smell. Poor boy. Stevie Wonder had a car crash and lost his sense of smell.
Oh.
That really happened. You know, it's absolutely ludicrous and weird. But yeah, and also the ghost coming back, his brother who he cut in half with a machete. He comes back and he's a bit older each time. He's like kind of matches the age of what he would have been. Apparently Johnny Cash kept seeing his brother. And every time he would see him, because he was the older brother, he'd be like 2 years older.
Yeah.
So each time he would be slightly older.
I didn't know that.
So this is like, it's weirdly like you know, it's quite obviously within the film, it's used in a comedic way, but it is somewhat still based in truth. And I love the fact the abusive parent, the abusive dad is just fantastic. I can't remember the actor's name who plays him, but I love the bit where it's like, this, the doctor's like, this is a particular bad case of somebody being cut in half with a machete. And he's like, talk sense to us, Doc. We're not scientists. It's just like little, just the little kind of throwaway lines are just absolute genius. It's brilliant. Just
do you know what's coming like every time he comes on? You're just waiting for it with the dad. Wrong kid, dad.
The wrong kid, dad. even when the kids are like going out to play, and it's like, it's great being young. We're full of possibilities. That's great. We can be anything we want to be. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing horrible is going to happen today. And it's just like, oh, fuck. Please, let's play. And we shouldn't play with Pa's machetes. Oh God, just absolutely just genius. I love where he goes to play the blues. He's like, I think I can play the blues. He's just got the deepest voice you've ever heard. Oh, just so much fun. And like you said, it was an amazing cast. Character actress Margot Martindale plays his mom. And she's and again, I love that every moment where he's like, his dad's sort of like, oh, I quite like the music, or I forgive him, or he's not a complete fuck up. And then all of a sudden something horrible happens and he ends up blaming him.
Wrong kid, dad.
And there's even a bit where he's just like shuffling the hay and he's just singing and he's like, wrong kid, dad, wrong kid, dad, wrong kid, dad. Just genius. Just absolute genius.
And I'm a really big fan of the Brian Wilson period about the LSD and the obsession, because for your listeners who aren't aware, Brian Wilson was working on an album called Smile through the 60s, and he didn't release it till I believe maybe 2013,
okay,
because he couldn't get it perfect. So that whole period where he writes the song Black Sheep is, which I guess is a play on Pet Sounds.
Yeah, of course.
It's spot on, and he actually looks like Brian Wilson as well during that period of time. And it's that attention to detail, like you said, of the other parts, which is why it excels above any other these spoofs at the time. Because if you watch the first 15 minutes, and my wife is not an easy person to please with comedy.
I'm sure on many levels, Nathan.
And I put it on and she was kind of watching it, and she the first time we watched it about 6 months, she was watching it and she was half in and out, and I don't really think she was clocking that it was kind of a spoof.
Yeah.
And then it clicks, then you, as soon as you kind of start picking up on it, it is a very well-written spoof compared to those films like Epic Movie and Disaster Movie and all of them.
Oh yeah. I mean, with those, it was just like the thing with this. Yeah. The thing with this is I'd never seen Ray. I'd never seen Walk the Line before I'd seen this film. I loved it. I saw it years ago. I only just for this podcast watched Ray and Walk the Line just to kind of see if I could get any more out of it than I already had done. And I think that's the sign of a good spoof, is that it's still funny, even though I don't know what the references are.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't understand the references. So, you know, I know roughly kind of the how Walk the Line goes or how Ray went. And, you know, yeah, it's historic, isn't it? It's their life. And I think the problem with those latter kind of spoof movies, those kind of, you know, Meet the Spartans or whatever you want to fucking call them, or all those kind of shit spoofs that came out much later on, it was just references.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. If you're just making a reference, it's not inherently funny. You're going, remember this? You know, remember The Office? Remember this? Remember that? It's not inherently funny. It's what you do within that. And I think this is a masterclass of not only capturing the essence and capturing the vibe of what they're going for, and kind of people recognizing it, even if they don't know it, they recognize it to a point. You go, okay, it's about, you know, it's about this fake guy who was real. And there is a post-credit scene where it's like, this is the real Dewey Cox. Yeah. The end. And I was like, you lying pricks, that's not a thing. But they were like, oh yeah, this is him. I'm like, look how real he is. But yeah, I think they've struck on something that is a perfect balance of kind of all those elements.
Mm.
And I think it's very rare you would get that or be able to repeat that, you know, lightning in a bottle situation with this. It's very, very rare. And I think it's wonderful. I do think more people should see it if they haven't. Last year it was voted as one of the sixth funniest comedy from the 21st century.
I was shocked about that. Was that Rolling Stone?
I think so, maybe.
Yeah.
But I believe, like you were saying, like the musicians out there, they know all these, like all the stuff I'm probably missing, all those kind of in-jokes with the songs and those references and things like that I don't know. I imagine it's on, like, it's played on tour buses. I imagine it's played, you know, after shows, before shows, and just like Spinal Tap, like Popstar, like all that stuff. I imagine the musicians get more of a kick out of this than probably anybody else because of all those little, like you said, the attention to detail. When they were producing it and putting it together, they were like, the sets need to look like the 70s sets, the 60s sets, these massive kind of big, and they're like 35 foot, these kind of these things. And John C. Reilly as well, like he said, we wrote 35 songs for this film. Most artists don't write 35 songs in their entire lifetime. You know, there was a drive, there was an intensity, there was a passion. And again, there's something very unique and something very special that I don't think we'll ever get again with this particular kind of comedy.
Well, as you said, these musical comedies don't seem to do well immediately at the cinema. So I think that puts off producers of investing in them unless it's been a huge stage hit.
Well, nowadays, if it's not a Marvel movie or a DC movie that cracks a billion, nobody gives a fuck. They're not going to produce, or unless it's a Barbie Oppenheimer situation, which is going to, I'm sure studios are going to try and recreate that. Like, I saw somebody was like, oh, this movie is coming out on the same day as this movie. Is it going to be an Oppenheimer Barbie thing? And someone was like, films come out on the same day, every day, all of the time. It doesn't mean it's going to be a Barbie Oppenheimer situation just because they're, you know, polar opposites. It was, again, lightning in a bottle struck. And that's what happened and it took off. But yeah, it's very, very rare we're going to get a situation like that.
Exactly. They'll be teaching that in marketing classes in university.
And I think it's like Deadpool. We're going to learn the wrong lessons from it. People are going to be like, people want toys. They want more toys in their films. No, we just want good films written by women for women of quality, not necessarily based around toys. Thank you very much. Do you have a favorite song? Do you say you had a favorite song?
Let's Duet is a corker. My wife Hannah thinks Walk Hard is just a brilliant song without even the joke. Well, the parody of it being Walk the Line. But Let's Duet is brilliant. The only thing that kind of ruins it, and I'm sorry to ruin it for everybody else, is
do it.
It's not Jenna Fisher who sings it.
But I think she's really good in the role, actually.
She's brilliant. And she looks fantastic in the role as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think when she was cast, she was like, oh, I'm going to be playing the Kristen Wiig role, the dowdy, put-upon wife who's like balancing. I love Kristen Wiig, who's like, it was like, I love you, your dreams are never going to happen. constantly like bringing him down, like, no, I do believe in you, but I believe that you'll fail. Just things like that. But yeah, she was like, I've never played this kind of sex pot, you know, role. And you get all the kind of like them trying to abstain and all that. And again, I could see Hannah in that kind of role. Definitely. I could see her. I think she would absolutely nail that, that type of role.
And Let's Duet just has that wonderful, I guess, entendre pun, which finishes the song off, which is, I'm sneaking up behind you. You can always come in my back door, which is just, as somebody who tries to write comedy songs and songs, that's a gift of a line. It really, really is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the first time I heard that, I cackled. So, because they sing it so earnestly as well.
Yeah.
And they really don't play it. And I was saying last night that John C. Reilly, he does play it just as if he's in a normal music biopic. It's so well done. I'm also a big fan of Beautiful Ride. I think Beautiful Ride is actually a really, really good song.
I quite enjoy Guilty as Charged.
That's brilliant.
I think Guilty as Charged. Your Honor, may I approach the bench? I love like there's, I think some films are guilty of like pointing out like jokes sometimes, but I quite enjoyed like some of the gags are like very throwaway, very silly and stupid. But I love the one where he's like, he's drinking and he's having sex and they're like, are you having a good time? And he's like, oh, I forgot you were here. Just drinking. And he's like, this is a fucking dark period. You know, just absolutely brilliant gag. Even like, it's such a silly gag as well. But like after the, all of the drug scenes. So throughout the film, it's much like Ray. So he keeps kind of, he starts on one drug and then it's a natural progression to the next drug and the next drug. But Tim Meadows is kind of, he's like, no, you don't want any part of this shit. You don't want none of this shit. And he starts listing all the benefits of the drug. And he's like, you know what? I kind of want to have a bit of that drug.
It's non-habit forming.
It's a cheapest drug there is.
And the cheapest drug there is what's wonderful is it's just great little lessons in comedy. Is it happens three times as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I think it's the weed, then LSD?
No, it's four times, isn't it?
Four, yeah.
Weed, cocaine, and fentanyls, and then is it Viagra?
Yes, the last one's Viagra.
It's the last.
He does do LSD, but that's within the Beatles section. So I don't think Tim Meadows is like, oh, you can't do it. Because this is when he's come off drugs and he's gone over to his wife. He's like, it's only LSD with the Beatles. Let's drop LSD with the Beatles. Nothing bad can happen, surely. And then he's on Angel Dust at one point. And he's going on like a Hulk rampage down the street, climbing up the building. And they're like, climb down from that building. It's inappropriate. Just fucking ridiculous. And like there's a great gag. Like we get all of those and Tim Meadows is great. And again, like played absolutely earnestly and seriously, much like a Leslie Nielsen in one of those kind of Naked Guns, like he's playing it absolutely straight and seriously. And again, like we get to that point where he's like, oh, it's a boner pill. It gives you a boner. This is good. No, I'll stay away from the Temptations. And then it's a really shit gag, but you've got the Temptations singing like My Girl at the side. And he's like, oh no, the Temptations, which again, shit gag, but I still kind of laugh at it. I really appreciate that. Like that's just like, I've seen that on so many like TikToks and Instagram videos and things like that. Such a great sequence of sketches, and they only get funnier each time because it's just like, it's just that revisiting that whole kind of trope of the going down the drugs and everything. I do really love the whole Beatles cameo section.
Oh, it's wonderful. You've got four huge actors there. Well, at the time, maybe Long's not that big these days, but you've got these four actors who know they're doing terrible Liverpudlian accents, and they're not shying away from it at all. And there's so much enjoyment in that as well.
It's like Jack Black. So it's Jack Black as Paul McCartney. You've got Paul Rudd as John Lennon. You've got what's his name as Ringo Starr?
Jason Schwartzman.
Schwartzman, that's it. And then you've got Justin Long as George Harrison. I love that bit where he's like, "I'm Paul McCartney. I'm the leader of the Beatles." And they just like, and they again, they're like, again, it's like John C. Reilly's like, again, that typical, like, you know, pointing out the comedy, but it's still quite funny where he's like, oh, there's a rift in the Beatles. And it's like, I'll go into my next mantra on Paul's a big fat cunt. Oh, just fucking, just genius. Like, just. Is there any jokes maybe that don't work for you, or are there any sections where you're like, oh, I could have done without this? Or
I think a lot of people would not understand, similar to Tropic Thunder, when you rewatch Tropic Thunder these days,
sure, yeah,
the the small person.
Yeah, sure.
Song probably hasn't aged as well.
No.
As it could. And I do think it does take a little bit of time to warm into.
Yes.
Mm. And then you do, even though you know you're about to watch a spoof, you still need to be aware of.
Yeah.
It takes time to get into that.
Yeah.
And the first song is Take My Hand, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is just a wonderful scene anyway, as they start singing about taking the hand and the reaction to the audience of tops being ripped and people fighting and this is the devil's music. It's just so well done.
But there's also that song where he's at the black club, like the R&B club, and he's like, I know the songs, I can do the show. Like it's Craig T. Robinson, I think it is, as well. And he's got all his hands bandaged up, but then they say it's like something else, like, oh, you're angina.
Laryngitis.
That's it. It's like, he can't play. It's laryngitis. And then they're like, oh yeah, I can do it. And then the song is like, I've got to love your Negro man or something like that. And it's like, and everyone's like, okay. But then they get into it. But I guess
they warm into it.
Again, I love that. I think the guy in it is the guy we love from Coming to America, the guy who runs the bar.
Oh.
I think that's the same actor. Yeah. And he's like, my patrons want to dance erotically. And they come here to dance erotically. They must, and they're like blow jobs and like doing anal and all sorts, like
But I guess the argument is, and I agree, when you kind of first watching it, you're like, oh, is this a him essentially doing a black voice?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
but then again, we watched Elvis and it was completely fine, and he got nominated for an Oscar. So when it's based on real life, it's fine, but
if you're making fun of it, maybe,
you know, I think cultural that's appropriation and everything like that, and that's the joke they're making.
Yes,
that is the, you know, it's a satire, isn't it?
But yeah, exactly,
that's what they're doing. And just to go back to the song, the songs for a moment, is there is a real art, I think, of writing a song in homage to an artist or a genre or a decade, and it has to go out to Fountains of Wayne's songwriter and Rachel Bloom with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. They do exactly the same thing, don't they, as well? It's like they sit down and go, right, we're going to do a pop punk song. And they just get it so right. Oh, we're going to do a country or a musical theatre song. And they get it right. And they've done exactly the same with Walk Hard. They've written these songs. And if you were to put the radio on and you didn't know it was a parody, a lot of them you go, oh, is this a nice Buddy Holly song? And we don't talk about how well crafted it, and the fact that none of them got nominated for an Oscar is ridiculous. I'll have to look up to see what won. It probably will be
some garbage, I'm sure.
Oh, it'll have been he was winning them every time. Toy Story.
Oh, what's his
Randy
name?
Newman. Randy Newman like won every year for like a period of 3-4 years.
Yeah, I can imagine. It was something like that, or some and I think. And because it's an R-rated comedy as well, I think I'm glad it's an R-rated comedy, because it allows them to go that much further with the comedy in it. And again, the grounding that we've talked about, the songs, the character, the believability of it. And then again, when you get to that point and we're seeing all the characters in their old age, and there's that joke where he's like, oh, I've got to play catch with all my kids. And then he's getting all these different kids coming. He's like, you sure you're mine? I'm not quite sure if you're my kid, but... You know, we get all that kind of humor as well, but when we get to that point, they've genuinely earned the seriousness and the kind of sentiment that an R-rated comedy wouldn't necessarily always get at the end. Yeah. You know, and it's fascinating to see that. Again, I've not seen the extended cut, so I can't say for sure how that falls in or if it adds or takes away anything, but the version I watched, like, it was kind of just bang on, like that is when it felt like it should end, and the way it kind of peaks and troughs and stuff, it just for me works. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there is a craftsmanship that, again, we kind of rarely would see in something like
diminish as well. Yeah. I think we think it's easy to write a Weird Al Yankovic-esque song, But I think it's a lot harder than you think it is. I know it is.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I've tried.
Death by Pie is very much inspired by this kind of comedy, the spoof, and then the comedy songs, which you've written. I think they've all been very good. And again, you know, some of them, I think maybe we probably wouldn't do again because of certain, you know, certain reasons and stuff. But I still think they are quality and that there's fun to be had in them. And even again, if you don't necessarily listen to the lyrics, or if you know, it's still like good quality songwriting and performance. You know, you made a whole LP out of Westernized, you know, and all the songs, and that's exactly why. And like when I watched this again, I was like, oh yeah, I can see the influence that this has had massively on you, and the idea that just because it's a comedy song doesn't mean it needs to be a shit song. It needs to be a quality song.
Exactly.
But funny. Like the joke is not the song. The joke is, you know, the lyrics maybe, or what's going on in the scene during the song, the dancing, whatever blocking we're doing. But yeah, that is, I can absolutely see the correlation between you and this film and all the work that you've been doing in Death by Pie since and before. There's absolutely that kind of spoofy Naked Gun Simpsons-esque humor that you have. There is a lot you can see, all the influences that feed definitely into the Death by Pie kind of framework. And even in the Pirate Show, you know, Henrietta and the Pirates, Harriet and the Pirates, sorry, you know, there's definitely, I can see an influence there, you know, of Walk Hard, definitely.
Well, we had a song in Harry and the Pirates. For those people, for the millions of people who didn't see Harry and the Pirates,
for the 20 plus people that listen, they will now know about Harry and the Pirates.
we did a song very similar to Let's Duet, which was a character who was announcing to the audience that they were bisexual. And the chorus went, "That's right, I'm buying a ticket back home," and very much influenced by Let's Duet.
Yes, the risque kids show that Nathan Smith puts on. But nobody, there was people that got the joke one, yeah, and then no complaints. So
exactly, win-win.
Win-win. So yeah, absolutely. And
Ben sang it beautifully as well. Ben
did,
he sang it earnestly as well.
Exactly, yeah. And again, there was enough of that. There was just enough of that beat, just like in Let's Duet, where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm in my dreams, you're blowing me some kisses. You know, there's that, just enough of that beat where it's like, yeah, oh yeah, I see what you did there. So yeah, I thought that was one of my favorite moments, in fact. And yeah, I there's a lot of it like reminds me of you and the kind of work, you know, we used to do and stuff, like the whole idea where he finally confronts his dad and he's like, "Dad, we need to, you know, I'm a new man, I've come off the drugs, I want to tell you I love you." And he's like, "Oh, all right, okay, what do you say to that, Dad?" And he's like, "Well, it's time to kill you." And he like pulls out a machete. And then he's like, "What are you doing, Dad?" He's like, "We're going to fight, finally, for the final time. We're going to fight to death with a machete." And then he accidentally cuts himself in half. And he's like, "Oh, I didn't know how easy it was to cut yourself in half with a machete." And he's like, right? And then he's like, "Maybe I shouldn't have trained my body and mind all these years to kill you in a machete fight." Oh, just glorious, glorious, just wonderful, wonderful comedy. What's the kind of the Cheryl Teagues Duffy thing like? Because I heard it's got a bit of a punch-up or something.
To answer your question earlier, that period of the 70s is where it dips a little bit.
Okay, yeah. So maybe
he breaks up with Darlene.
Yes.
And he's got a third wife who's Teagues. I can imagine that if I'd watch, what was Cheryl Teagues in famously?
I want to say it was like Dallas. Or I know Patrick Duffy was in Dallas. I don't know if she was in Dallas or something like that, maybe. Something 70s-esque.
Oh, no, she was just a model.
Oh, there you go. Maybe it was, yeah, Patrick Duffy was definitely, because he's the guy in the shower and it's like, it's all a dream. That's what Patrick Duffy's from.
It's a little bit out of my time, but I can imagine if I was a bit older, in the 80s, 70s, yeah. I might have enjoyed it a bit more. But yeah, that's a little bit of a dip. Mm. And then that's eventually when he goes towards the end anyway, in the final much. Act.
Yeah, pretty much. I did quite enjoy the animated section that's like Yellow Submarine when they take the LSD.
Yeah.
And then I think that segues into the Black Sheep song and all that. But I thought, I've seen Yellow Submarine. I get the reference. I've seen the film, as fucking bizarre as it is. I've seen it. So I appreciated that kind of segment. So I enjoyed all the kind of the Bob Dylan as well. Like the Bob Dylan song is great. I think it's Royal Jelly, I think it's called. And I thought that was genius, because he even sounds, I think he was born in the same area that Bob Dylan comes from, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's how he kind of got into it. He kind of just fell back into his old accent. And yeah, I thought that was genius. That one I think was really good.
I think it's at that point where he transforms into another decade and artist, where it becomes more than just a cash in on biopics. I see what they're doing now. This is very smart. And then as it goes into Beach Boys and into the 70s and disco, because it's like a disco version, isn't it?
He does like a disco version of Starman and Walk Hard. It's like a goodbye love. Goodbye love and all that. I quite enjoyed when he was on the cocaine. I want to try me some of that cocaine. And he's doing like a punk version, and they're like discovering punk for the first time. You sound like a punk, you know, playing so fast. I love as well that he keeps the same band throughout his entire life. And that's another thing about the biopics, is like, you notice as well that everybody they meet is like the most important person in their life. Like every single person, they're like, oh yes, hello, my future wife, you know. And I love that they keep the same band. Chris Parnell, I'm a big fan of. And I thought he's great. And I love that bit where he's like, you know, you never gave me any girls. You never gave me any money. You gave me these polystyrene cats. I don't want any polystyrene cats. And he's like, you slept with my wife. You slept with me. And I've had confused feelings about that for 10 years. What am I supposed to do?
And you never once paid for drugs. Not once.
Apparently, I read that was improvised. Like, he was supposed to have, like, other lines, but he decided just to repeat that line again for the third time. And it kind of became his, like, you know, his catchphrase. And he's great. He's great in Mean Girls as well. Like, we love him in Mean Girls. Required for you to make a speech. he's always there, like 100%. He's always, he was even in Mean Girls 2. He was the only character to return.
Is he?
For Mean Girls 2, yes. I found that out recently. yes, I don't think it's good, though. I don't think it's good in any sense.
So nobody's going to be defending that?
No, maybe not. Maybe not. You never know. There's been some, Spice World was defended on here, so you never know. You never know what might come up. But so we're slowly coming to an end, Nathan. If there is anything, what is your final argument for people to watch Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story?
I think it is a film before its time. I think if you watch it back now and see some of the cameos, like in a lot of Judd Apatow films, you will be pleasantly surprised. It's well written. The songs are brilliant. If you're a fan of things like anything by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, any of the Lonely Island stuff, this is the film to watch. You know, it's becoming a cult classic on the comedy scene. If you're a fan of Mel Brooks spoofs, those Z films, Zucker Abraham, Zucker, this is the film for you. And John C. Reilly is actor, performer, musician that I hope to be one day.
And in that article, again, I'll link the article. It's quite a long article, but it's definitely well worth reading. Like all the producers' stories, the songwriters' stories, the actors' stories. You know, it's an amazing, proper, good article. But I will link it. It was kind of a year, I think it was like 10-year anniversary or something. or 20 year anniversary of just kind of remembering it, and people uncovering it, this gem. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The thing I noticed in the article is how much every single person praise John C. Reilly for his commitment, his dedication, his work ethic, his performance, his comedy. Because there's even that moment in the jail where they're speaking Yiddish, because they've got the producers. We were all played by Jewish actors, and they were like, "Oh, these actors, these producers, they own the media," and all. There's that joke going on in there. I love that. What's his name? Who plays the recording artist? He's in the booth and he's like, "There's no way you're going to just convince me a song is going to change your life right here and now." Because that's like straight out of Ray. That's straight out of Walk the Line. Like, they just go, "Oh, well, I'm just going to write a classic instantly. I'm just going to, you know, immediately, just not going to spend hours and hours rehearsing or working out. I'm just going to, because I'm a genius, I'm just going to write it immediately." But I can't remember that actor's name, but he's brilliant as well. And he's like, "Yep, you did it. You created something." And apparently, that's Amore is kind of it. That's an Elvis Presley reference, because apparently he came in and he did a similar song. I can't remember. I think it's in the IMDb, but he did a similar song, and people are like, no, do something new, do your own sound, do something, you know." And I think he did That's All Right Mama instead, and that was his first big hit. And that and Jack Black as well as Elvis. Forgot to mention. Oh, sorry, Jack White. Sorry, we've got Jack Black.
They're both in there.
Jack Black and Jack White. So I thought his Elvis was really funny.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Really, really underrated performance in the film. That
so he goes.
And it's Ed Helms as well, isn't it? Small role.
Yeah, he doesn't really even have a joke, which is really bizarre. He's just there. He just kind of like, "Oh, rock and roll. This is amazing." But yeah, I imagine he probably had something ended up on the cutting room floor. But yes, but we are not the other only people to very much like this film, Nathan. We have some comments. So I've asked if anybody has any thoughts or feelings on the film, and I've also asked if they are a fan of any particular music biopics or spoofs. So let's see what people said. So Tony Farina says, "I love musicals, but there is a special place in my heart for fake bands that make real music. The Monkees, The Wonders, The Commitments are bands I love. The Dewey Cox soundtrack is amazing. Let's Duet is extraordinary. The title track is an anthem. As for the film, John C. Reilly was the only choice for Dewey. He can sing, he can act, he can keep a straight face with dongs inches from his nose." So yeah, we didn't mention that scene either.
Hear, hear. Well said.
Absolutely. Well said, Tony. Thank you very much for your comments. But yeah, like, there's full frontal male nudity in this, which is, again, something you don't see. And again, right next to the actor's face.
I forgot how many breasts there were in the film. Bare breasts.
Yeah,
the
there's
film.
Quite a few.
But we get a penis. So
we get a penis. So, we get a penis. So there is some balancing
There's
some balance there. So Paul Meller, so that's at the Meller Geek on Twitter. He says, "I don't think I've seen many music biopics or spoofs of them, but I remember really liking The Doors on its big screen release. I guess I'm open to your recommendations. Though I do like the odd music-related comedy, e.g. Wayne's World and Airheads."
I love Airheads. Airheads doesn't get enough.
Yeah, I watched it when I was a kid, but I don't think I was in the right mood or maybe the right age for it. Maybe I should rewatch that, try and get back. Because it's Buscemi, Sandler and Fraser, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Harry Shearer is the DJ that they hold hostage.
Ah, of course. Right. No, I should definitely rewatch that. So I Am Jack's Musings, my biggest fan. He says, "Spinal Taps, obviously. Pop Star, Never Stop Stopping. People Just Do Nothing, big in Japan. Walk the Line. And Inside a Llewellyn Davis. And an honorable mention to 8 Mile."
Yeah. Really?
Good mix.
Yeah.
Good mix.
A very eclectic mix there.
Absolutely. I've never seen People Just Do Nothing. I think that's their movie, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So Blake Biles, he says, "Walk the Line is a massively underrated film, in my opinion. And he says specifically the nude scene from the gentleman waggling his penis about. That is a great scene specifically. And Hail Leviathan, pop star never stops stopping. This is on Instagram. That's Hail_Leviathan. Is on par with this. Is Spinal Tap for me. Endlessly funny and rewatchable. So, so funny. Great songs too. That is it. That's all of our comments. So thank you, Nathan. I know you've found the very short amount of time in your schedule to sit down with me and to talk Walk Hard, and I really do appreciate it. I recommend this also. I love this film. It's so funny. You've not really had to defend it too much, but it doesn't need defending in a sense, but more people should get eyes on it, I think.
I agree. And just because it's a box office bomb doesn't mean it's a bad film.
Absolutely, absolutely. As my podcast has historically noted on many occasion, that box office doesn't mean much, reviews don't mean much. Just watch it, give it a go. You might like it. You never know. You never know. Just keep your mind open.
Can I finish with one comment?
Sure.
And this is a bit of a curveball.
Sure.
But did you know that you have the same laugh as Conan O'Brien?
Really?
You do. Your listeners, listen to a rival podcast, because he's obviously rivaling Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, don't steal any of it. I don't want to steal any of his listeners or all 20.
But have a listen at Conan O'Brien and Dan Brazier have the same laughs.
I've not noticed it myself, but then again, I'm hearing it from the inside out. I don't know. Don't know how you describe it, but there you go. Compare laughs with Conan. I mean, I guess it's a compliment. I'm not offended by it, so yeah. I'll take it.
Hey,
you wrote
The Simpsons.
You did.
One of the best episodes of The Simpsons.
He did. Well, very much. Well, you're the John C. Reilly to my Conan O'Brien.
Oh, thank you. So. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
Absolutely. I won't say it again. That's it. But it's recorded for all time now. Not unless I cut it out, which I might. Yeah. Who knows? And then everyone just thinks I think very poorly of you. Nathan, where can people find you on the social medias? What are you up to? What's happening?
I am. You can find me on social media at Nath Rich Smith. That's on Instagram and Twitter. I am going to Dubai next month to play Macbeth in Macbeth for a short theatre run.
The Scottish play.
Yes, the Scottish play, which...
I've just realised I didn't call you by your correct name. It's now Hobley Smith.
It's Nathan Hobley Smith, yeah. So that's my real name.
Yes, that's your married name.
That's my married name, is yeah. Nathan Hobley Smith.
Sorry, apologies. Apology, I need to get with the times.
No. It's fine, because on Instagram and on Twitter, I'm still under my actor's name, which is sure. Nathan Richard Smith.
Sure, no problem. Maybe I'll re-record the intro to make myself sound more.
You don't
like
need to. It's fine.
I've got to use your. We don't want to use your dead name. We've got to use your right name.
No dead naming.
But yes, thank you, Nathan Hobley Smith. So yes, check him out. Check him out. What he's doing. Lots of fun songs and videos. His YouTube channel's really good. I'll link that with all the comedy songs. And you did a lot of the TV theme songs as well. Some maybe I'll link the Death by Pie stuff as well.
Oh yeah. Get some of that absolutely. On that.
Some good quality content there as well. But yes, you can, if you want to find out what I'm doing, if you want to join the Prattalion and be briefed in full on the Secret Balls, swing over to Prattleworld at www.spiderdanandthesecretballs.com and use the hashtag #PrepareForPrattle when you interact with us. Please subscribe to the Pop Culture Collective newsletter to find out what myself, Comics in Motion, and all the other related podcasts are up to week by week. I'd like to thank my patrons on Patreon. I am Jax Musing. Scott Hodgson is now back, large and in charge on Patreon. I'm Jax Musing, Simon Cotton, Paul Meller, Scott Hodgson, Max Byrne, Mike Burton, Angry Andy, Tonya Todd, Tony Farina, and Math. Thank you very much for your continuing donations. It is very much appreciated and helps Prattle World keep on turning. And if you ever find yourself in a position to help the podcast,
please consider it. It has been an honor and a privilege, as always, Nathan Hobley-Smith. You are amazing. Thank you very much for finding the time to do this.
Thank you very much, Conan O'Brien. I mean, Daniel Brazier.
Good night.